Welcome to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Join us for a conversation about faith in everyday life, the trials, the tribulations, and the triumphs. Discussions about how faith matters to you and our community. Support for Faith Matters is brought to you by Hospice of Lubbock, Happy State Bank, and the law offices of Mullen, Horde, and Brown, LLP. Now, here's your host, Ted Dotts.
Hello, I'm Ted Dotts, and welcome to Faith Matters. Today, our guest is Dr. Kathy Morton. I'm just delighted to have Dr. Morton with us. I'm delighted because, number one, I've been in your home and experienced your hospitality. And number two, you've got a husband that's not only unique, but a very generous kind of man. And I know some of the care you've given your children and grandchildren. So those things make me glad. But I also know that you went back a little bit later in life and did your doctorate at Texas Tech University and then have been involved in education. I know that you have managed $1 million grants in your time. I know also that you serve on a state board and have for over 8 years. I also know that you consult, now that you're in a kind of state of retirement, consult for at least 40 counties from Marfa all the way up here. And I also understand that one of your goals is that small independent school districts have the same opportunities as larger. So, Dr. Morton, what got you into education?
Actually, Ted, I started back on my undergraduate degree at 35. I went to school like many people did at my age, right out of high school, and went to McMurray College in Abilene and met my husband there, a future husband. He graduated and he was going to law school, and someone had to go to work to help support that effort. So I dropped out of school after a year and a half and worked for a number of years, had 3 children, and when my youngest was 6 years old, I started back to Tech. We had moved to Lubbock, of course, by then. I started on an undergraduate degree in political science, actually a general studies degree. Did that degree, completed that, then went on to get a master's in communications, specializing in public relations and technical writing, with a minor in political science, so I kind of kept that mix going. And it was during that time that I started teaching part-time at Tech. When I finished my master's degree, I thought, well, why not go ahead and get a doctorate? So I started on a doctorate and completed a doctorate in higher education at Texas Tech. Taught for about 8 years in mass comm at Tech and thoroughly enjoyed it. One of the great joys, I guess, of my life, and still keep up with a number of students who graduated while I was there. Had the great pleasure of visiting one in Seattle about 2 years ago, I guess. And so that was kind of my intro into education. But I moved from higher ed to public ed and K-12 education after I finished my doctorate. Went to work for the College of Education at Tech, managing a large grant that involved Tech and Lubbock Christian University, Wayland Baptist, and West Texas A&M and about 40 school districts. It was at the very beginning of technology and education. At that time, each of those 40-some-odd school districts, actually I think it was a little more than 50, had one, maybe two instructional computers in the building. So it was at the very beginning of education and technology coming together. Did that for about 3 years. That grant was awarded to the College of Education at Tech. It was a 3-year grant. When that was over, I was officing at the Education Service Center, and they hired me, and I stayed there and worked there for another 8 years.
You've raised such an important issue. You're at the very first of technology, say modern computer technology, reaching into the school system. Do you have some observations about that? You've watched it develop.
Well, first of all, I have to tell you, I'm not a technologist. I don't do boxes and wires. And I'm very quick to tell you that. I'm above average computer user, but I know who to call and when to call them. I do have a good grasp of how things work and what needs to be done, but I am not a technician and don't want to be. Now, I think your question was tell you some of how that got started.
Sure.
I think maybe the biggest push came in the late 90s with what was then the Telecommunications Infrastructure Fund in Texas. It was a legislative program that was established to ensure that schools school districts had access to the internet, specifically at that time, T1 lines, which was a precursor to the broadband wire and wireless delivery now. But the Telecommunications Infrastructure Fund allowed school districts to get point-to-point access and pay for point-to-point access to the internet rather than paying a distance-sensitive cost. Now, what that meant was schools like Borden County would pay the same price for delivery from Lubbock as Lubbock ISD would, which was a huge benefit to the small schools because they had prior to that been paying distance sensitive rates, which meant they paid by the mile. And so the further you were from a provider in Lubbock primarily, or the same all the way around the state, the further you were from a provider, the more you paid. Well, there's a big inequity there because the students needed it just as bad in Borden County or Guthrie or Paducah as they do in Lubbock. So the Telecommunications Infrastructure Fund was a really big issue that got technology into schools. The fund comes from, and you'll still see it if you look at your telephone bills, there's still a little line on your telephone bills that says Telecommunications Infrastructure Fund, but it was distributed through the organization, the state agency, what they call the TIF, or Telecommunications Infrastructure Fund Board, and it funded computers in education and some of the infrastructure that would allow schools to install computers.
Could you tell us some kind of impact this would have had on teachers in the classroom?
Well, it scared teachers to death, I guess, because they had new expectations. They had not been using computers at all, so the big challenge in the mid-90s was professional development for the teachers to be sure that they knew how to use computers at all, and more important, how they needed to integrate technology in the classroom. And that's still a challenge because for many of them it was very new. And even with young teachers just fresh out of college, it was new in college. I remember one of the things we bought from a large grant that I managed while I was at the service center was an editing computer, which was about, 4 feet wide and 4 feet long and had one computer on it. And it was a big deal, but it was new to the faculty at Tech. We had similar ones at LCU and Wayland and WT. That was a big deal. So just learning how to use a computer and learning how to use it in the classroom were huge challenges.
How did teachers go about learning how to do that? What was the procedure or process?
Well, two or three different things. The TIF board, of course, when they allocated funds for computers, required that a certain percentage of the funds be spent on professional development. The Education Service Center here was very instrumental in providing a great deal of training. And then groups like the Texas Computer Education Association that I serve on the board of do a tremendous amount of training across the state. It's scheduled either for a group of schools or for an individual school. Many schools still require a certain number of days for technology professional development, and it's still a challenge in many places.
We're going to take a quick break now. You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1, conversation with Dr. Kathy Morton.
You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with your host, Ted Dotz. Welcome back to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Now again, your host, Ted Dotz.
Welcome back to Faith Matters. I'm Ted Dotz with our guest today, Dr. Kathy Morton. And Kathy, I'd like to continue our conversation by asking you a question. In my life, I'm nearly 80 years old. One of the strong influences has been the way women have come forward in my life. That is, when I grew up, it was thought pretty much a woman stayed at home and raised children. And to have a woman and raise children and then engage all the education you have done has been a startling and sterling model. How did you get what it took to go forward with your education after you were 35 and with three children?
Well, I guess first I have to say I have an incredibly supportive husband, and he is very much in favor of my pursuing whatever I think is important, and that's a real blessing to me. I could not have done it without his support and without his love. We will celebrate 50 years of marriage next year, so I guess one of us has given up on trying to convince the other we can't do something. I don't know. But I started back to school really with the idea that I wanted to teach at the college level. My greatest dream as a child was to go to the University of Missouri School of Journalism. I had wonderful journalism teachers in junior high and high school. But here we were in Lubbock, and that wasn't a possibility.
Were so, your teachers that influenced you, were they male or female?
Female.
Female.
Ruth Thrush, whose brother was Paul Ridings, whose name is very familiar to many journalists in the state, was my junior high school journalism teacher. And she just convinced us all that we could do whatever we felt like we wanted to do and encouraged us so much that that really was a driving force for me.
I know one of your interests is in leadership. How do you work with teachers to help them be the kind of teachers that influenced you?
I think the greatest thing a leader has, the greatest attribute is respect for who they're working with. And one of the things that I believe very strongly, and I see this in school superintendents that I really admire, is that if you're going to ask teachers to do something, you need to be willing to do it yourself. And I think that was particularly important in technology. When I was working on this major grant at the service center, and then when I continued through with a number of other grants while I was at the service center, and even after that, we did an awful lot of professional development. And I always felt like I needed to do it as well. If I wasn't willing to do it, I couldn't encourage others to do it. And I think that's a big issue. I've taken an awful lot of online teaching courses. I think I've now managed about 4 because I was encouraging teachers to develop the skills to teach online. And I didn't think I could ask them to do it if I wasn't willing to do it. So I think that's a big issue. And the superintendents I see who are most successful in schools and the principals are those who work with and learn with their faculty.
That's wonderful. Could you define a little more and talk more about professional development in your mind? What is that?
You hear it called a lot of things, and my least favorite is in service because that seems to have a requirement attached to it. Professional development to me is really a growth issue. It's adapting to change and being willing to develop the new skills necessary to teach in a new world. And it's trite, but it's true. The schools today are not the schools we went to. They are not structured the same. The curriculum is certainly different. The expectations of the teachers and the students is very different. So professional development to me is the opportunity to learn new skills and learn how to apply them in the classroom or in any setting, really.
Well, would you talk a little more about the difference, say, today and yesterday?
Well, I guess the funniest thing to me is that I learned to type on an electric typewriter. It was the first electric typewriter in the school. It was a little Smith Corona that weighed maybe 15 pounds, and that was technology, and it was great, and I was very privileged to be one of the 3 in the class to get an electric typewriter, which was good, except that when I got out of high school and applied for a job when my husband was in law school, I went to take a typing test in Austin, and they gave me a manual typewriter, which I had never used, so that was quite a blow. I got the job in spite of that, but I think the requirements that are put on teachers are so much different than they were when I was in school.
Could you illustrate a difference?
Well, I think today teachers, they're expected to fill a lot of the roles that parents and grandparents did in the past. With the change in the profile of the students, we have so many children who are in single-parent homes who need that extra parent. And that's not to say that single-parent homes are not doing a good job. They are. They're single-parent homes doing remarkable jobs, but they only have so many hours in the day. So teachers are expected to fill that gap many times. They're expected to fill the gap in health education, in sex education, and they're expected to teach far beyond what the textbook requires. And I think that's very difficult on teachers. I think they're being asked to do so much. And then I think the testing is just unbelievable. And I can say that because it's a pretty commonly held view.
I hear that complaint often, or that concern about testing. Do you have some views you'd be willing to share about
Well,
that?
You know, I don't know. I'm not in the classroom, so I can't speak from that perspective. I can speak from what I hear. And I know I have a family of educators. My daughter is a high school science teacher. My granddaughter is a 5th grade math teacher. I have a lot of friends who are teachers. and they spend an inordinate amount of time preparing for tests. And I don't remember that rigid testing when I was a child. I remember going to school and we had a 6 weeks test. And that was it. But so much of the time now, teachers are not only spending time preparing for tests, but their advancement is dependent so often on their students' performance. And I think that's a difficult thing to manage.
Talk to me about a moment about their advancement. What is an advancement for a teacher?
Well, in many cases, it's keeping their job and being able to move up within a school district. Maybe it's getting a better assignment in a classroom they really want to teach. We all know that teachers are assigned classes, and particularly in small schools, they're assigned based on need. So you may be hired to do one thing and then get there the first day and discover, oh gosh, we need you to do something else. And that's what you do. So very often they feel like they're in situations that are not ideal for them. And so they're looking to move into what their real career choice was. Or they're looking to move into a principal's job or another central office administrative job.
And some of that then depends upon how well their students do on these standardized tests.
Very often it does. Now, I don't know that there's a school district would say that that's a direct relationship, but I think certainly it's a relationship that exists in some way or another. And more important, I think it's a perceived relationship for teachers. I think they feel like they have to perform, or their students have to perform, and they are just wrung out by the end of the year.
We'll be going into a break now. You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1, a conversation with Dr. Kathy Morton.
You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with your host, Ted Dotz. Welcome back to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Now again, your host, Ted Dotz.
Welcome back to Faith Matters. I'm Ted Dotz, and I'm having a great conversation with Dr. Kathy Morton, a leading educator in our whole community. Kathy, I've grown up here in West Texas, and one thing I highly enjoy is going to towns around West Texas. Just last week, I went to Guthrie, and I also, of course, came through Lorenzo. I have a lot of cherished memories of both communities. And I know you've done some special projects with them. Would you talk to us a bit about Guthrie and Lorenzo?
I would love to. I've worked with both of those schools for a number of years. The superintendents I count as good friends. Guthrie is in the second least populated county in the United States. It is an exemplary school district by any measure, I think. The superintendent is active. He's engaged in what's going on a daily basis. He plans and delivers professional development. The school is one of 20 participating at the invitation of the Commissioner of Education on the Texas High Performing Schools Consortium. They are freed to do some innovative things with curriculum and with assessment. Guthrie, rather than relying on standardized testing all the time, has what they call a graduate profile, which is a description of what they want their students to look like when they graduate, and it includes a number of different dimensions. They are involved in so many programs that you would not expect to find in a small school. They have a wonderful technology program and a wonderful technology teacher who I'm happy to say was a student of mine when he first started on his graduate programming. They do robotics. They do video. They have a wonderful studio that they have named the Black Box Studio. And they compete with schools much, much larger. They also have initiated a Guthrie Virtual School. And while there are only roughly 100 students on campus, K-12, they have about 600 students in the Texas Virtual School Network as students of Guthrie Virtual School. Offer Spanish, English, math, sociology, and I believe we're working on a French class now, and I continue to work with them and on that virtual school project. I think that's really kind of an exciting thing. They're working now on a new gardening program to become self-sustaining in their cafeteria program. They grow all their own vegetables and work with the Four Sixes Ranch, which, of course, is their primary industry in Guthrie and King County. They buy meat off the hoof, so all of their meat is pesticide-free, grass-grazed. So I think that's kind of exciting, but it's fun to get to do those things. And there's a little bitty school doing wonderful things. Lorenzo is a much different school. Lorenzo's just a few miles outside of Lubbock. Also a bright young superintendent who's very, I'm going to say, aggressive in looking for new opportunities for the students. I've been working with him for about 4 years, actually, since he was high school principal on a technology center. They have land donated there on the highway that you drove by where they will build a technology center. They'll break ground this summer. The first program will be an electrician program, have a teacher who's certified to teach that, and those students will articulate into South Plains College. The land has been donated. Large amount of money has already been donated, and they are continuing to raise money for that. They will begin with the electrician program and a construction program, hope to add diesel and some other programs as time goes by. They also have a great technology program. Both of those schools have competed in robotics programs for the last 3 years. Guthrie sends their students to state every year to the Texas Computer Education Association Robotics Tournament, and Lorenzo sends their students as well, and that means they have won at the regional level. Lorenzo students also participate in another robotics program, and they sent students to St. Louis this year for national competition. So here are two little schools that might not get much notice unless you drive through and stop and see what they're doing. And they are too much like many others in the state who are doing some wonderful things. And I think that's exciting. It, to me, it's a blessing, and it's a ministry to me to be able to work with them. I just think I'm real blessed to
you
be able to work
me
with
of
those
that,
two.
Saying that was going around a few years ago, small is beautiful. And I think we forget that out here when we see the decline of our communities.
Right.
And here are two little gems you've told us about, and I'm sure there are many others.
There are many others, and I right now work with about 45 school districts.
Wow.
Doing some funding programs with them, federal funding programs, write grants for many small school districts, and I'm always excited to see the new things they want to do, and it's exciting to me to see superintendents, and that's who I primarily work with, superintendents who want to do more for their schools than they're able to do without seeking additional funding and being very aggressive in doing that. So
you work with superintendents. Now, what makes a good superintendent, Kathy?
Well, I jokingly tell them it's one who answers my emails, but that's probably not what you want. I think a collaborative working spirit is probably the attribute that I value the most. Ones who realize that they work with people, they seek information when they need it, and they are willing to give up a little. You know, there's a difference between collaboration and cooperation. Cooperation can often mean we just agree to do it, but collaboration to me means we understand that if we work together, we all may have to give up a little, but we all will gain much more. And to me, that's a good working relationship.
Well, could you spread that word? It means a broader audience. Look, before our time is over, I have another two or three questions, but one of them I want to get to, if it's all right. Over my life, I've heard teachers most often have anguish over the discipline in the classroom.
It's tough.
And could you talk some about that, your views on that? Or?
Well, again, I'm not in the classroom, so this is observation. I think the legal system has made it very difficult for teachers. They are very often afraid to discipline students for fear that they will step beyond what the law allows. And I think, quite honestly, many parents make it difficult for teachers to discipline. They are afraid of the repercussions. I have a daughter who's a high school science teacher, and she tells me often that when she works with a student who's a challenge to discipline, she's quick to say, "Let me tell you how my mother handled that." I don't know if that's good or bad, but nonetheless, that's what she says. But it's a big challenge. Kids are different today. They grow up so much faster. They are so much more independent, and that comes through in the classroom. And that also means that in the classroom, they challenge much more than I would ever have challenged a teacher. I don't know the answer to that, but I know it's a difficult process to manage. Classroom management and classroom discipline are big issues.
Kathy, thank you very much. Your sensitivity shows up well in this last question. I'm reminded I sat in class with you once as you took us through an understanding of poverty, and I can see you're not only a teacher of teachers, but a good teacher yourself.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us and giving of yourself to this program. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Ted Dodds, and you've been listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1.
You've been listening to Faith Matters with your host, Ted Dodds. Support for Faith Matters is brought to you by Hospice of Lubbock, Happy State Bank, and the law firm of Mullen, Hoard & Brown, LLP. Join us next Sunday for another edition of Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1.